This is Kathy coming to you with Pantograph from Bloomington Normal, and then I'm going to start out with the Sunday edition. And the first article on the front page says, McLean County Arts Center mural captures local faces in self-portraits. The McLean County Arts Center is offering residents a unique opportunity to leave their mark on the center and on downtown Bloomington for decades to come through hand-painted self-portraits. MCAC's community mural project aims to place several hundred portraits on some 2,000 square feet of space on the exterior and retaining walls of the century-old building at 601 Northeast Street in Bloomington. The self-portraits end up being this attenuated time capsule of who we are right now, said Doug Johnson, the center's executive director, and people can come and revisit that over time. They can find their friends here. They can see how they elected to manifest their visage in a two-dimensional format. All materials are provided, and there is no cost to create a self-portrait or attend one of the project's workshops. The project was funded by a $4,000 grant from the Illinois Arts Council, with federal funds provided by the National Endowment for the Arts, and was originally intended to have 20 workshops, according to the center's website. But the center has been able to continue the project into this year, this next year, Johnson said, with the next workshop taking place from 4 to 6 p.m. Tuesday, November the 4th, led by Johnson himself. Weathering the Weather. McCack specifically chose the materials, the paints, the canvas, and the wall preparations to ensure that the mural withstands the elements, Johnson said. Nova Color Paints developed a paint that is resistant to fading due to light exposure, which is important for an outdoor mural, Johnson said. This is the reason many museums do not allow flash photography of historic paintings, because every time the light hits it, that color fades incrementally because those pigments are fugitive. Not every pigment stands up over time, Johnson said. The canvas is essentially a kind of plastic fabric that has been primed, and so they're painting on that, he said, and then we cut it out to fit the mural properly. Then we use what's called a Nova Gel Medium. It's a gel medium that we attach to the wall, and then as it dries, it adheres firmly onto the wall. All this extra effort ensures that the portraits and their colors stay just as they appear the day they were created, Johnson said. We have some five-year-olds that have done self-portraits that when they're 65, they'll come and look the same, he said. Welcome to downtown. This project also lines up with the second phase of Bloomington's downtown streetscape project, Johnson said. Phase one of the project, which renovates several blocks of North Main Street and North Main Plaza, where East and Main Streets merge, is currently ongoing, with phase two set to begin in March, according to the city's streetscape vision. According to the vision, the second project will focus on the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts, Douglas Street, and the 100 block of East Market Street. This includes added parking for both the BPCPA and Metcalf, said Johnson, who sits on the steering committee of the streetscape. In place of the 12 spots we have now, just south of the MCAC, there will be 187 spots that will go across Douglas Street all the way to Second Presbyterian Church, he said. So this creates the front door for downtown. It'll vastly reconfigure how we understand this incredible asset we have that is downtown, which makes McLean County Arts Center really at the front door of downtown, Johnson said. And having that mural to welcome people and announce the foundation of our organization, literally and metaphorically, is the community. It becomes a great tool to welcome people. Everyone has a place. The mural project is open to people from all walks of life, Johnson said, having helped guide portraits for high school students, businessmen and women, and families of all ages. There are people that very much wanted to do a self-portrait because they had terminal cancer, he said. There's people out there that very much wanted to do a self-portrait because they wanted to not just identify themselves, but identify themselves with their child or their pet or their partner, and they want to put that idea of selfhood and encapsulate it in something that becomes a memento mori. It becomes something that says, I'm here, Johnson says. He has even led a session for a group of people facing homelessness. We invited them back to install portraits, he said. We did a pizza party for them because we want them to know that they have a place. They have a place in the arts. They have a place here. Everyone has a place in the arts, Johnson said. It canonizes the human experience. This is part of our record, of our dialogue, of human existence we are. we have elected to document and provide as a placeholder, as a stepping stone, as a talisman for the future, because that is something we have been. We've got some self-portraits here. Pictured is a self-portrait that the pantograph photographer Clay Jackson painted on Wednesday. The McLean County Art Center in Bloomington is part of the Community Mural Project. The project includes hundreds of self-portraits created by community members through a grant from the Illinois Arts Council. And there, Dennis Wentworth of Downs adds detail to a self-portrait on Wednesday at the McLean County Arts Center. And there's also a picture of another citizen painting. Pantograph reporter J. Dak Algahar mixes paint under the guidance of Doug Johnson, executive director for the McLean County Arts Center. And he is leading the workshops that help people paint their portraits. Doug Johnson, executive director of the McLean County Arts Center, traces an outline onto a sheet of special canvas on Wednesday. And then there's a picture of several people painting. Kathy Left and Dennis Wentworth create self-portraits. Okay. This next front page article is written by Bill Flick. It says, Simone Biles doing a perfect landing in Bloomington Normal. Our latest listings is offered by the readers and your own resident light boy. Sometimes planes and jets drop into Bloomington that weren't originally supposed to because of weather somewhere else or a hiccup that makes a pilot say, let's play it safe. That happened one day last week at the Central Illinois Regional Airport. A mid-sized corporate jet headed from Chicago's Midway to an airport in Rogers, Arkansas, ran into trouble mid-flight. One of its two engines wasn't cooperating. The pilot did the smart thing, shut down the bad engine and diverted it to zero. A flight emergency was declared. The Bloomington Fire Department rolled in, airport crews hustled. For a few minutes, East Bloomington's runways were closed, ready for the worst. Then, 4 minutes later, everything was open again. All fairly routine as these things go, except for one detail. With that passenger, one of three on the jet, it was Simone Biles, 28 years old, 11 Olympic medals to her name, generally agreed to be one of the most remarkable athletes walking the planet. At Sierra, according to reports, as the greatest gymnast in the world hung out, waiting for a backup plane to arrive, people looked and then looked twice to ask, wait, is that? Yes, it is. And unlike Simone's landings and competitions, this one didn't even need to stick. Newest Bloomington Normal residents. The Twin City area predominantly has fox squirrels and gray squirrels, and through genetic quirks, an occasional white-tailed squirrel. But Doug Haas has spotted something unusual in his Bloomington backyard the other day. A coal black squirrel, relatively uncommon downstate. As the integration of America continues, and there is a picture of a solid black squirrel climbing up a tree here in Bloomington. Latest greatest business slogan, spotted in Bloomington on the back of a Zeschke sip cleaning truck. Truck is filled with political promises. Still more great Illinois high school athletic team nicknames. In Galesburg, they are the Silver Streaks, named after a famed high-speed New Age railroad that sped through Galesburg back in 1934. And in Polo, a town of 2,500 southwest of Rockford, what else? They are the Polo Marcos. No explanation is needed. Most fun, devotedly warm, high-flying send-off. When Elmer Edward Gray, formerly of Normal, a 93-year-old University High grad, Korean War veteran, former McLean County Sheriff's Deputy, and then Security Officer for Bloomington District 87 schools passed one day last week, the family launched a special request. They asked everyone who knew Elmer to purchase a helium-filled balloon, attach a personal message to Elmer, and at high noon on Sunday, October 26th, go to a park or a backyard and release the balloon to the heavens while singing Elmer's favorite song, When the Saints Go Marching In as It Ascended into the Heavens. Latest curiosity, spotted by a reader along Main Street in Bloomington, right across from the Illinois Wesleyan campus, a license plate that reads Trump, except the T had been blacked out. Whether it's someone's idea of humor or a fan who fell out of favor, that remains a mystery. So it now reads Trump. Most unexpected customer. Kim Wyburn owns a popular shirt store along College Avenue in Normal, Wild Birds Unlimited. And when she went to unlock the door to the store the other morning, she spotted an interesting first customer. It was, what else? A bird. A yellow tail, a new visitor from Birds Unlimited in Normal, stalking back and forth on the sidewalk as if waiting for Vibram to open her store full of vintage bird seed. It was a bird so patient that Kim even had time to pull out her phone and shoot several pictures. The unexpected visitor, later it was identified as a yellow rail, a rare bird in central Illinois that a local birder, Bodie Thompson, said 90% of the birders in this area had never seen. But at least one rare bird apparently knows where to go for a good breakfast. And got an item for light? Send it to bfflick@pantograph.com or the Bill Flick page on Facebook. Our latest board of contributors, John McClassen, Pontiac, Van Baker, Donna Frausci, Ruthie Cobb, Joe Culpepper, Jan Baker, and Doug Haas, Bloomington, David Messenger, and Jesse Freeman from Normal. And, of course, more uncertainty over the food assistance. SNAP benefits face delays despite the judges ordering their funding by Stephen Groves, Ali Swenson, and Susan Hay of the Associated Press. The crises at the heart of the government shutdown fight in Washington were coming to a head Saturday as the federal food assistance program faced delays and millions of Americans were set to see a dramatic rise in their health insurance bills. The impacts on basic needs, food, and medical care underscore how the impasse hits homes across the United States. The Trump administration's plans to freeze payments to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program on Saturday were halted by federal judges, but the delay in payouts still likely will leave millions of people short on their grocery bills. It all added to the strain on the country, with a month of missed paychecks for federal workers and growing air travel delays. The shutdown is already the second longest in history, and it entered its second month Saturday. Yet in Washington, lawmakers are away from the Capitol Hill, and both parties are entrenched in their positions. The House has not met for legislative business in more than 6 weeks, while Senate Majority Leader John Thune, Republican of South Dakota, closed his chamber for the weekend after the bipartisan talks failed to achieve significant progress. Thune said that he hoped the pressure starts to intensify and the consequences of keeping the government shut down become even more real for everybody that they will express, hopefully, new interest in trying to come up with a path forward. The stalemate appears increasingly unsustainable as Republican President Donald Trump demands action and Democratic leaders warn that an uproar over rising health insurance costs will force Congress to act. This weekend, Americans face a health care crisis unprecedented in modern times, Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer of New York said this past week. The Department of Agriculture planned to withhold payments to the food program starting Saturday until two federal judges on Friday ordered the administration to make them. Trump said he would provide the money but wanted more legal direction from the court, which will not happen until Monday. Benefits already face delays because it takes a week or more to load SNAP cards in many states. People are just nervous and scared, said Jill Corbin, the director of the St. Vincent de Paul Soup Kitchen and Food Pantry in Norwich, Connecticut. It's not really a definite answer that we have right now. As people lined up early Saturday for hot meals and groceries, the organization had to have 10 extra volunteers to help newcomers navigate the process. On Wednesday, about 400 families visited the food pantry and 555 people received hot meals. The SNAP program serves about 1 in 8 Americans and costs about $8 million per month. The judges agreed that the USDA needed to at least tap a contingency fund of about $5 billion to keep the program running. That left some uncertainty about whether the department would only provide partial benefits for the month. The Trump administration needs to follow the law and fix this problem immediately by working closely with states to get nutritional assistance to the millions who rely on it as soon as possible, House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York said after the ruling. Democrats demanded this past week that the government fund SNAP, while Republicans blamed Democrats for repeatedly voting against a short-term government funding bill. We are now reaching a breaking point thanks to Democrats voting no on government funding. Now, 14 different times, House Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican of Louisiana, said at a news conference on Friday. Trump late Thursday suggested that Republican senators who hold a majority end the shutdown by getting rid of the filibuster rules that prevent most legislation from advancing unless it has the support of at least 60 senators. Democrats used the filibuster to block a funding bill from the Senate for weeks. Republican leaders quickly rejected Trump's idea, but the discussion showed how desperate the fight became. The annual sign-up period for the Affordable Care Act health insurance also began Saturday, and there are sharp increases in what people are paying for coverage. Enhanced tax credits that help most enrollees pay for the health insurance plans are set to expire next year. Democrats rallied around a push to extend these credits and refused to vote for government funding legislation until Congress acts. Senator Patty Murray, Democrat of Washington, spoke on the Senate floor this past week about constituents who she said face premium increases of up to $2,000 a month if the credits expire. "I'm hearing from families in my state today who are panicked," she said. "The time to act is now. If Congress does not extend the credits, subsidized enrollees will face cost increases of about 114%, or more than $1,000 per year on average," healthcare research nonprofit KFF found. Some Republicans in Congress were open to the idea of extending the subsidies, but they also want to make major changes to the health law enacted while Democrat Barack Obama was president. Thune offered Democrats a vote on extending the benefits, but has not guaranteed a result. He demanded that Democrats first vote to reopen the government. T.J. McEwen, whose family owns and operates farm markets in Mesa and Apache Junction, Arizona, said 15% of the market's customers use SNAP benefits. He was not assuming the delays would immediately hurt the business, but added, "Hopefully this isn't a long-term problem, because once those benefits run out, it's going to start to hurt." Says a note to our readers, starting Monday, the Pantograph will have a Tuesday-Sunday print schedule. You can read Monday's news in our e-edition, a replica of the printed paper, at pantograph.com/e-edition. You'll find the puzzles and comics there, too. As always, you can find the latest news, sports, and entertainment at pantograph.com. Our e-edition, website, and app are included in your print subscription. If you haven't created an account, you can do so at pantograph.com/activate. This next article, from the McLean County Courts. Bloomington man, Creek Coeur woman charged with drug-induced homicide. A Bloomington man and a Creek Coeur woman face drug-induced homicide charges in the death of a 33-year-old Gridley woman. James Day, 35, and Shayla K. Slater, 33, were in court Friday for initial appearance hearings before Judge Amy McFarland. They are each charged by bill of indictment with the following in the June 10th death of Maggie Mae Morris: drug-induced homicide, a Class X felony; unlawful delivery of a controlled substance with 1 to 5 grams of heroin, a Class 1 felony; unlawful delivery of a controlled substance with a Schedule 3 narcotic, a Class 2 felony; unlawful possession of a controlled substance with 1 to 15 grams of heroin, a Class 4 felony. Assistant State's Attorney Jeffrey Horvay filed a petition to detain Day, arguing he poses a danger that could not be mitigated by measures other than detention. But Slater was released, no petition to keep her in custody, in order to abide by the mandatory conditions of pretrial release, as well as discretionary conditions, not to consume or possess alcohol, cannabis, or controlled substances, to obtain a substance abuse evaluation and complete recommended treatment, and to report to pretrial supervision. Horvay said Slater has no felony record and she had agreed to meet with the Illinois State Police to surrender voluntarily. In Day's case, Horvay argued he should be denied pretrial release, noting a lengthy criminal history and a history of failing to comply to court orders. Probable cause was determined by the McLean County Grand Jury Wednesday, so McFarland said in a statement was not necessary during Friday's hearing. She waived reading the probable cause statement in both cases, and the attorneys proceeded to present evidence and arguments for Day's detention hearing. Horvay said these changes came about June 9th, when Day set up a drug deal to purchase heroin for himself and his fiancée, Morris. Illinois State Police executed multiple search warrants during the investigation and obtained messages exchanged between Day and another person in which they discussed the purchase of approximately 3 grams of heroin, Horvay said. Day drove from Gridley to another county to pick up the drugs and provided some of the money to purchase the drugs, he said. Corvey said on June 11th, Morris's father called 911 to report Morris was in cardiac arrest. He took life-saving measures, but she was ultimately pronounced dead. According to her obituary published by McDuffie Pill's Memorial Home in Shenoah, she died at her residence in Gridley. A death investigator confirmed her cause of death was heroin intoxication, Horvey said. Assistant Public Defender Stuart Wallace, who argued for Day's release, said Morris and Day were co-facilitators in their drug use. He also said that while Day's criminal history is relatively lengthy, most of his offenses are related to drug possession, drug use, or driving while under the influence of drugs. Day had been sober for 3 months, Wallace said, asking McFarland to consider releasing the defendant to allow him to address his drug abuse. Here's the problem, at least from the people's perspective. You have to believe that someone's going to do what they're supposed to do, Horvath said. The prosecutor said the defendant was on pretrial release in one case and probation for another when Morris died. The drug-induced homicide affected someone close to him, but he did it anyway, Horvath said. While making her decision on Day's case, McFarland spoke to the defendant's significant history. She acknowledged most of his cases were indicative of addiction issues, but McFarland also noted that Day scores at the highest level of potential for recidivism and said he is unlikely to follow pretrial release conditions. She ordered Day to be detained, taking note of the dangerousness that is inherent in the utilization of this type of illegal drugs, McFarland said. Each defendant was arraigned during their Friday hearings, with Assistant Public Defender Jacob Nieren representing Slater, and both pled not guilty. They are scheduled for pretrial hearings at 10 a.m. on December 5th. In some local briefs, Salvation Army to open winter emergency shelter in Bloomington. Beginning Monday, November 3rd, the Salvation Army of Bloomington will open its doors to its winter emergency shelter, providing a reprieve from the weather for people facing homelessness. This shelter is more than a warm bed, it's a lifeline, said Major Dan Leisher. People seeking shelter will have access to hot meals, showers, and laundry facilities, as well as access to community services. The social services team at Salvation Army will provide one-on-one case management and a holistic approach to help clients find more stable housing and self-sufficiency. The shelter will operate through mid-March. To donate to shelter services, please contact the Salvation Army of Bloomington at 309-829-9476 or online at sabloomington.org. Donations can be mailed to 611 West Washington Street in Bloomington, 61701. Last winter, more than 150 individuals sought shelter, totaling nearly 3,000 overnight stays. ISU to close sidewalks for planned College of Fine Arts project. In anticipation of planned renovations to the Wonsuk Kim College of Fine Arts, traffic routes for pedestrians and motorists will be diverted starting Monday. Individuals using the Constitution Trail along Guilford Street will be rerouted at least during a portion of the two-year construction project. Traffic will be rerouted using Fell Avenue and College Avenue. The detoured route will be appropriately marked prior to the closure. Pedestrians may also travel north on University Street and east on West Virginia Avenue to the Camelback Bridge Trail entrance. Those using the South School Street sidewalk at the intersection of Beaufort Street will be directed to the Fell Avenue crosswalk. Normal firefighter to run for McLean County Board seat. Normal firefighter Matt Steinkenig announced his campaign to run for the McLean County Board in the 10th District. The seat, which is currently held by the board member Corey Byrne, will be available in the 2026 midterm election. Steinkenig said in a news release that he intends to run on the platform of common sense, accountability, and a limited government. I'm stepping forward because I believe McLean County deserves a government that knows its limits and respects your hard-earned dollars, Steinkenig said in a news release. We need leaders who focus on the essential services that keep our community strong while finding responsible ways to reduce waste and lower the burden of taxes on families and small businesses. Steinkenig has served with the Normal Fire Department for the last 20 years. New Christian bookstore to open in Normal. A new store for Religious Resources will celebrate its grand opening on November 8th, just in time for the holidays. Towers of Light Christian Resources will open at 10 a.m. next Saturday, November 8th at 1604 Mesa Drive, Suite B in Normal. Along with Religious Resources, the store will offer a unique experience called Read While Listening, according to a press release. RWL combines auditory and visual learning techniques to enhance reading performance, according to the release. Readers will use audiobook players to both listen to and read books that are preloaded into the players. The store will also feature materials for children, seniors, and the visually impaired. Following the grand opening, normal hours will be from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Tuesdays through Fridays and 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturdays. They also plan to host authors from 6 to 9 p.m. on Thursdays in what are called Cocoa and Conversation events. For more information, you can contact Alan Broken at 309-315-9210 or alanbroken@towersoflight.net. Hy-Vee to offer free meals to those 12 and under November 3rd through the 7th. Hy-Vee stores across the Midwest will offer free meals to children younger than 12 from 4 to 7 p.m. November 3rd through the 7th. According to a Friday press release, every store that has hot food service will provide free meals to children, with those meals being available for everyone else at $3. On Monday, November 3rd, baked potato and pulled pork. Tuesday, November 4th, spaghetti with meat sauce, salad, and garlic bread. Wednesday, November 5th, chicken and noodles with mashed potatoes. Thursday, November 6th, chili and a cinnamon roll. Friday, November the 7th, sesame chicken or orange chicken in a rice bowl. Hy-Vee also announced that it will be sharing ideas on social media for family meals that cost less than $3 a serving, including products from the store's weekly ads. Additionally, Hy-Vee customers will have the opportunity to donate to local food pantries at the checkout with $5 and $10 food donations for purchase. These donation bags include items most needed by food pantries, including canned vegetables, pasta sauce, canned proteins, and cereal, according to the news release. Mandy Rowing Studio to celebrate 3 years of fine art. Mandy Rowing Fine Art Studio and Gallery is celebrating its third anniversary, coinciding with the 25th Annual Art Walk in downtown Bloomington. Guests are invited to the studio at 105 West Monroe Street, Suite A, for light refreshments and to enjoy the works of Rowing from 4 to 9 p.m. November 6th and 7th, and from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, November 8th. Those in attendance can also enter a drawing for a special prize pack of items featuring Rowing's work. This milestone is a celebration of creativity, connection, and the incredible support of our local arts community, Rowing said in a press release. Whether you've taken a class, collected a piece, or simply stopped in to say hello, we'd love to celebrate with you. Normal to flush fire hydrants, November 9th through the 16th. The town of Normal will be flushing fire hydrants in certain neighborhoods from November 9th through the 16th. The town recommends residents avoid washing clothes from the hours of 10 p.m. and 8 a.m. while the flushing is ongoing, as water might be discolored. A full map of the work can be found at normal.il.gov/522/hydrant-flushing. The following neighborhoods and dates are approximates. November 9th through the 12th, areas north of College Avenue, east of Constitution Trail, and south of Sheldon Drive, Collie Ridge and Traymore subdivisions, areas east of Veterans Parkway, and south of I-55. And I don't have time to do the rest of those. That's the end of part one for today. I'm reading the E edition of the Pantograph for Sunday. This is Kathy signing off. We'll be right back.